Hello and welcome to Hardcover Hose, a long-distance book club where two book lovers express their feelings on their book of the moment via podcast. I am one half of your host, Sam Cabrera-Dixon.
And I am Sammy Skorstad.
Together we have combed through book talk, combined our to-be read lists, and now we intend to make our way through them one book at a time. We'd love for you to come along with us and join the discussion.
The book of the moment for today's episode is Hood Feminism by Mickey Kendall. Just a forewarning for those of you listening, this is not a spoiler-free zone. We will be discussing this book in all of its glory, which of course includes revealing the ending. Mickey Kendall is a writer, diversity consultant, and occasional feminist. She has appeared on the BBC, NPR, and The Daily Show, PBS, Good Morning America, MSNBC, Al Jazeera, WBEZ, and Showtime, and discusses race, feminism, and police violence, tech, and pop culture at institutions and universities across the country. She is the author of the New York Times bestselling Hood Feminism, recipient of the Chicago Review of Books Award, and named a Best Book of the Year by BBC Bustle and Time. She is also the author of Amazons, Abolitionists, and Activists, a graphic novel illustrated by A. D'Amico. Her essays can be found at Time, The New York Times, The Guardian, The Washington Post, Essence, Vogue, The Boston Globe, NBC, and a host of other sites.
Before we jump into discussing our own thoughts and feelings regarding the book, I'm going to go ahead and read through the blurb on the back of the book for the sake of contextualizing it. Quote, today's feminist movement has a glaring blind spot, and paradoxically, it is women. Mainstream feminists rarely talk about meeting basic needs as a feminist issue, argues Mickey Kendall, but food insecurity, access to quality education, safe neighborhoods, and a living wage and medical care are all feminist issues. All too often, however, the focus is not on basic survival for the many, but on increasing privilege for the few. The feminists refuse to prioritize these issues at blah, blah, blah. What am I reading? The feminists refuse to prioritize these issues has only refuse? Am I just reading the sentence wrong? The feminists refuse to prioritize these issues has only. Should this be refusal? Yeah. Okay. Oh, sorry. This is from the back of the book. Or Amazon, whichever I copy and pasted from. Anyways.
Let's just blame it on Jeff Bezos.
Yeah. The feminist refusal to prioritize these issues has only exacerbated the age-old problem of both, what is this word?
What?
I don't know that word.
What the fuck?
I'm not going to lie to you. Learning a new word at the age of 25. Internecine Discord? Is it like online?
I'm gonna look it up.
Internecine?
Destructive to both sides in a conflict.
Wow, big word. Okay.
Big word. That's an SAT word for you.
That is an SAT word. Discord and women who rebuff at carrying the title. Moreover, prominent white feminists broadly suffer from their own myopia? What is wrong with me? With regard to how things like race, class, sexual orientation, and ability intersect with gender. How can we stand in solidarity as a movement, Kendall asks, when there is a distinct likelihood that some women are oppressing others? In her searing collection of essays, Mickey Kendall takes aim at the legitimacy of the modern feminist movement, arguing that it has chronically failed to address the needs of all but a few women. Drawing on her own experiences with hunger, violence, hypersexualization, along with incisive commentary on reproductive rights, politics, pop culture, the stigma of mental health, and more, Hood Feminism delivers an irrefutable indictment of a moment in flux. Movement in flux. Jesus. An unforgettable debut, Kendall has written a ferocious call to all would-be feminists to live out the true mandate of the movement in thought and in deed. Without any further ado, let's get into it.
Samantha Dixon.
It's too early for me to try to be smart. What can okay. I say? I'm also just, words scare me. You know, like when you're in a class and you know you're about to read next, like the next line syndrome kicks in and suddenly you're like, you can't read. Every single time I read the blurb of these books, I feel like sweaty pressure. Like I'm going to say a word wrong and look stupid.
Hands get clammy.
And I do every time. So it's a real fear and it occurs every single time without fail. So
I'm sorry, we're traumatizing
but also
you
there
here.
were definitely words in there that I've never seen before.
No, those were
so
big
I'm
words.
Learning. We're learning already today, is what I'm gathering from this. I also just realized I left my water bottle. Hold on, 1 second. I was okay. While I was breathing heavy,
I need my emotional support water bottle.
1 second. I was like, something at my setup is missing. Arguably the most important thing. Okay. On that note, let's get into trigger warnings. These aren't on the website, so I just put down what I remembered. Domestic violence, abuse, racism, divorce, eating disorders, sexism, mental health, transphobia. Can you think of any more?
I think that covers it.
Gun violence.
Gun violence, yeah.
Police violence.
Mm-hmm.
If we think of any more, I'm sure we'll say them. So this was, I really enjoyed this. I want to start off with that. I feel like I think I've figured out how I need to be reading my nonfiction books, because I do obviously like reading them on my Kindle when they're available on like Kindle Unlimited. I think that's really fun, and I like to be able to get my notes really easy.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think my brain works better with learning when I have the physical book.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So I bought the physical of Hood Feminism for this week. So I could tab and mark and highlight and interact with the text. And it was very fun. I also don't want to shout out billionaires, but I want to shout out Apple for 1 second, because this new thing where you can take the photo, I know it's not that new, but where you can take a photo and if there's text in the photo, you can highlight it and copy and paste. I was like, wait a minute, I can just take notes that way. So that's what I did the whole time. And I was like, wow, we're in the future.
This is technology.
This is what I'm talking about. This is so good. So I was like, oh, wow, I can get the best of both worlds of like how I like being able to see my highlights in a digital form while also interacting with the text in a physical form. So I may be doing that going forward. I just wanted to talk about my process for reading this, because I had three colors for marking things. One was for like, I felt like key points that Kendall was trying to make. One was for things that I was like, yes, you know,
snaps,
my snaps.
Yeah.
For
yeah, snaps coming out.
And things that I found were like brutal, like something she said that was like, ow.
Yeah.
Right? So that was my reading process.
Oh, I want to hear those brutal
book.
Ones.
There's a few. We can get to them. Remind me in a little bit.
Okay.
Okay. But I also was like, because it's a learny book, I wasn't going to try to push myself to like read it all in one sitting. However, I sat down with it and I read 70% of it in one sitting on accident. So I was like, okay, it's always when you want to do something that you end up doing the opposite. But I was just really in the vibe of learning. I've also just been on a Black nonfiction kick lately. So perhaps that is
part of it
affecting it. I just finished reading The Three Mothers. Can't remember the author's name. Anna something. Tubbs was her very last name. Can't remember the middle name in there. But like I just feel like I've been on a learning kick lately. Look at me becoming a nonfiction bitch, first of all.
Hey, you.
I know.
Honestly.
You know what I've been doing? I've been trying to level out the universe. So every time I'm reading like toe curling smut, I'm like, I gotta balance it out with a couple of important nonfiction works.
Okay. I respect it.
Leveling out the universe.
So I started reading this and realized that I have been reading versions of this in school all quarter.
Oh, really?
This was the best class I took at UCSD the entire time I was there, Capitalism and Gender. And so many of the readings were on, were written by POC women and writing about the way that feminism left them behind and how to be, or like how to kind of like restructure feminism in a way that prioritizes the people who are essentially the most marginalized. And so I was like, I started reading this and I was like thinking of quotes and things from the other readings that I've been
Nice.
doing the last few months. And I was like, okay, I know these points. I know what's up. I know what's going on. But this was written, whereas like obviously at UCSD, it's the readings assigned, sometimes you're like getting through them and you're like, you didn't have to write a word that big and that complicated right there. This
Me trying
was,
to get through that
I know, but
room.
like this was written in a very like digestible
Oh yeah.
way where you're like, you're going along with the story and you're like getting all the points and yes, and whereas like the stuff I was like like in the fucking trenches with trying to get through was making my brain hurt. Like it was all the same points and like very, very important and interesting. And I loved it. And that class was fantastic. But
Right.
yeah. So those are my first impressions was, oh, I've been reading all about this for the last 3 months.
Right. I think we recently had this conversation after I ended the pod. We were talking about something. I don't know what episode it was, but talking about we took a class in high school where we had a teacher who used to say, like, you're when you learn things, you're putting it in your backpack. So I was like that when you started talking, I was like, you got a bunch of stuff in your
I got
backpack.
so much in my backpack. My backpack is overflowing right now.
Yeah, we got so much stuff in there. It's a good thing. This was one of those things where I too was feeling like, ooh, I'm able to pull other things from my backpack and put a new thing in my backpack. I love that analogy. I think it's perfect.
It is your
It's like
academic
every time
backpack.
you, yeah, your little academic backpack, you learn things, you keep things in there, you carry them around with you. It is snowing.
Oh,
I just, what? It's not even that
okay.
cold today. It was raining earlier. I just turned my head and it's sn snowing. What? Okay.
Okay.
It's fucking March 24th. Why is
Okay.
it snowing?
I don't know.
Okay. I missed the sun.
Alrighty.
Already, sorry. But yeah, I too felt like I was like, ooh, I'm putting something else in my backpack. But I thought it was particularly, no, I wouldn't say eye-opening, but
Yeah.
I think it was good to not, hold on, I'm being specific about a point here, not the whole book. I thought the book was very good.
Okay.
I thought that she said something in particular towards the end that I was like, I think we need to talk about this more. And it was somewhere. Oh, in general, if you've come to these spaces looking to take things away for your benefit instead of looking to contribute, then you're already doing it wrong. And I think a lot of the times when, because we're both having this conversation as two non-Black women, right? And I think a lot of times when non-Black people want to learn about, for instance, hood feminism or Black history or things like this, they have a tendency to say, well, I want to learn more about this so I can be more well informed.
It's for not, it's how they're going to be perceived by others. I want to be
Correct.
more informed. I want to be the best ally I can be, but in a way where it's like not
You are
contributing.
taking,
It's
yeah.
you are taking, want to take this knowledge. You want other people to provide this knowledge for you so that you can be perceived as the best white person possible because
Right.
you have your, it's like a reflection of white and all these other things. Whereas
Yeah.
it's like, yeah. Oh, yeah. That was such a good,
Yeah, so
such a
when I
good
read
point.
that part, I was like, yeah, I think also that could have definitely been thrown into the beginning because I do feel like even I have the tendency to say like, oh, I do want to learn more about that like thing. And I think even though like obviously education and knowledge is very important, the way in which you're thinking about gaining this knowledge is has a direct effect on how you're looking at that knowledge to be obtained versus like to be helpful, if that made sense. But
Sense.
okay, cool.
Yeah.
So I was really thinking about that one while I was reading this, and then two, it made me think of this TikTok
Okay.
that
This article that I
I saw.
read via
This article
TikTok.
that I read, it made me think of this TikTok that I saw recently, where it was I believe it was a Latina creator who was talking about when white people start to talk about white people in like a way where they're like, that's not me kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so there's,
I'm not one of those white people.
Yeah. There's this tendency to do that because when you think you're an ally kind of vibes that you're like, oh, that makes me not like them, which in a lot of ways I agree. It does make like, there's a distinct difference between those white people and these white people sometimes. Mm-hmm, right. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, there's always this need to remind people, I feel, to say like, well, you got to put we in front of there. Like it is yeah. we in that case. So I think this was making me think about that a lot, yeah. especially just reading, because reading this as a non-Black person, I think like you have to think like that all the time. You're like, oh, you may know these things, but I'm not Black and I know my perspective is coming from half white also. So I need to take that into consideration as well.
Mm-hmm. It makes me think of specifically in like queer spaces, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. the importance.
I think that's what the TikTok was about. Now that
yeah, yeah,
saying that
probably. I think you probably sent it to me, but
probably did.
It's so true. Like a lot of times, there was a person in my class because like I had been kind of marinating on this for a while already, mm-hmm. and it's like the queer spaces and stuff when white people they kind of. White queers really lean into their identity as being gay, lesbian, trans, or whatever, as like that is their connection to oppression.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And
yes.
So a girl in my class that I was talking about, she explained it so eloquently. She was like, it is like they latch on to this form of oppression in order to sidestep their responsibility in white supremacy.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, my God, that's it. Like, in the fewest amount of words, that was, like, the best way to explain it.
Yeah.
And it's so true. It's, like, latching on to this, like, well, I'm not like other white people. Like I'm also oppressed. So, like, mm-hmm. I can't be the oppressor. Whereas, like, it's when you – it's so interesting, the dynamics of power in different situations.
Yeah.
It's like for white people, especially if you're cis or like cis passing, mm-hmm. first and foremost, in all spaces, you are white. It does not matter yeah. what other identity you have, and like that your the way that you are perceived as white gives you advantages over everybody else.
Yep.
And it's so like that's just so important to remember, and like straight passing people, cis passing people, like your identity as a queer in a lot of times, like yes, you can, there are other spaces where that does not necessarily apply, and like you can be oppressed or hate crimed or the other things, mm-hmm. but like I don't know, just this, like, refusal to be in a – I mean, obviously, you don't want to
– acknowledge,
you don't
maybe.
Want to,
yeah.
yeah. Acknowledge your role in oppression mm-hmm. is so, so tired.
You like, know, also, what you're making me think of right now is, like, you know when you see TikToks or whatever, people online being, like mm-hmm. – queer people online being like, call me a slur. I want somebody to call me a slur just so they can see what I'm like. You think about what you're saying.
Yeah.
Think about it.
Think about it a little bit.
Back and let's think about what you're trying to say. You want someone to oppress you so bad. Mm-hmm. And for what reason? Right? Yeah. So that really made me think about that. You're absolutely right. There's a huge willingness to, or maybe not willingness, words are escaping me right now. There is a huge divide, I feel, between people thinking, oh, I am just as oppressed as that group, but in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I think like this, some of the things that were highlighted specifically in the text, right, are like about how white women think that the way Black women are doing some kinds of feminism is wrong.
Right.
Right. Like there was a, I don't recall the specifics, but there was a section where they were talking. She was saying there was a white girl in her class in college or something who was speaking out, like, well, why weren't any black women supporting this guy, this black man? And it was just like she was wrong. Which like I there think were. It's just a lot of times media will take the photos of the white people supporting versus, you know, and putting things out. That's like the, for example, I don't know if you remember this. Okay. My brain just jumped to this because I just remembered it. But I think it was probably like 2018. This was like the still the peak of like people using Finstas, you know? What was the other word for Finsta? Anyway,
was there another word?
Your priv. I was like, I know there's another word besides Finsta.
I don't think anybody online uses that like anymore. It's only ever Finsta
in reference to the Finsta. Exactly.
Yeah.
So it was like peak Finsta era, right? And people were posting like stupid things on their Finstas at this point, like just the things you wouldn't say to, like you'd have to waterboard that out of me kind of vibes,
right?
And one of the things that was going around was people being like, Albert Einstein was alive in the 1900s, and also Martin Luther King was alive in the 1900s, and I was like, these are things that like history and specifically U.S. history is doing on purpose. Like they are making you think that these things happened a really long time ago on purpose by only putting in black and white photos of Martin Luther King in your textbooks versus colored photos, right? Things of the sort. Like these are things that are happening on purpose to make history look one particular way. Exactly. So in the case of what Mickey Kendall was saying in her college class, she was like, yeah, well, the photos you've seen from the people protesting in support of whatever this case was with that black man was that there were only these photos being put out of the white women supporting. Because, yeah, the news and coverage and all that media were not like, oh, we got to make sure everybody looks good here. We got to only make sure the white people look good.
Yep.
And that continues.
Yeah.
That's why things like the way we have the internet now, like with TikTok, which I know is under consideration at the moment.
Yeah.
I've been ignoring it because I just can't
I've been watching it. It's bad.
It's really bad. I've watched enough. I've seen what I needed to show you and I'm done. But it's like these things that we have right now with TikTok and Instagram and Twitter where ideas are now able to spread faster than they've ever been able to spread and wider than they've ever been able to spread in previous history. So when we have things that are happening, we are seeing them. We are not seeing them through the lens of the news who's curated it specifically to show us, right? Or directly ignoring things on purpose, right? So,
bro, I will never forget watching lives on TikTok while Russia was invading Ukraine last year.
Yeah.
Like that, oh my god.
Well, and that's why even in the summer of 2020 when we saw
all the Black Lives Matter
Black Lives Matter and things of the sort, because we were able to see firsthand the brutality of police in a way that was not palatable, you know what I mean, in a way that made people viscerally angry, because we've always gotten a watered down version. I'm saying we as in non-black people, because I know they're not getting the watered-down version. No. But all other non-black people have been getting a watered-down version of what does police brutality against the black community mean. And so what it really – in that summer, we were seeing for the first time – like not for the first time, but we were seeing on a very large scale – now that we had TikTok and things were able to spread like that too, this – the true brutality and cruelness that is happening on a day-to-day basis. So
I think it also really played into, you know, there was a divide in the generations, I think, especially within white people. The older people who were getting their news about the protests from news sources.
Yeah.
And they were like, it's riots. They're violent. Yes, it's riots. Whereas the younger people who are getting footage and opinions from people who were actually at the protest, who were like, it was not violent until the police showed up.
Yep.
And like showing proof of that. And so like the divide of like the type of media that we are using is shaping our perspectives on so much.
Yeah.
And yeah, it just made me think of it. Cause I remember having conversations with like adults at that time, and they're like, oh, they're riots. And I'm like, no, they're fucking not. Like,
yeah.
Sometimes they're getting a little violent. Yes.
And when does that start? Exactly. Right. When are we consistently seeing the violence starting?
Also,
is the second the police show up.
Maybe this time it warrants a little violence if it were to go that way. So,
the thing too about how we, one of the things that Mika Kendall was saying in the book was white women looking at other women and saying that they are doing feminism wrong.
Right.
And so, like, the willingness to be angry and vocal. When white women do it, it's, you know, it's cute and palatable. But when black women or Latinas or whatever, other women do it, then it's
angry,
suddenly
it's
like,
violent, it's aggressive.
Yeah, she's just the angry black woman. She's just the, you know, feisty Latina, things like this. But yeah, I lost my train of thought.
But yeah.
Sorry. But yeah. Before we move on to discuss the rest of Hood Feminism, let's listen to a quick word about the brand sponsoring today's episode.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
All right, let's continue the conversation. Yeah. Again. Oh yeah, I'm so sorry. I haven't had any caffeine yet. Which I'm sure neither have you.
Well, I know.
I think what's happening is I'm giving like a burst of intelligent things to say, and then the fuse gets to the end. And then I need like a few seconds to recover.
One thing that this is something I think I was still like, I read it and I was like, oh shit, I do that. I need to fix that. Mm-hmm. Was feminism that ignores survival. It's about increasing privilege. And because a lot of times I think I was sectioning off movements in my head and stuff. And so it's like the idea of, or like housing, income, well, income inequality, I usually jump in with feminism, but like housing, gun violence,
hunger,
those things, I typically do not, I mean, like put under the umbrella of feminism. And then reading this, I was like, oh no, everything should be under this umbrella of a very more like much more inclusive the way that these affect different populations disproportionately like needs to be I think just like putting it under
it's
the
thinking
umbrella
about
of, like,
it yeah feminist, thinking yes. about it within the context of
feminism
right. I got what you were trying to say, don't worry. I think it was very interesting to look at the way that this book was sectioned off.
I like that. It was like a collection
in that way that you're saying is like we have the whole book, right, from back to front is is feminism, but so what goes inside is like the different perspectives we should be thinking of in the context of, so like gun violence, which makes sense. Once she started talking about it, I was like,
that does make sense.
That does
I know.
Make perfect sense to me.
So many,
but again, I've
like,
never even put that in the context of thought about that with like looking at it through the feminist
lens.
Exactly. I thought her section on eating disorders was quite interesting as well. Because I think eating disorders have been so, I'm going to use the word romanticized for a second, but romanticized in the media for white people for so long.
Yeah.
Like what I'm trying to say is the thing I'm thinking about is like core 2012 to 2013, 2014 Tumblr days.
Okay.
Where like the thigh gap, you never saw a person of color with the thigh gap doing the thigh gap thing online, right?
Mm-mm.
Or Fitspo, like fitness inspo.
Yeah.
Those were all white women. And this was like an online phenomena created and curated for and by white women, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that we see, even online, when I'm watching TikToks, I think I see the majority of people talking about eating disorders are coming from white people and white women in general.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there is a tendency to be like, this is affecting people, but it's mostly just affecting white women, which that's not true. Like, this is, if it's something that can happen to a human being, it can happen to any human being.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was very interesting to look at the feminism of eating disorder stuff. Lost the train of thought there.
Within
the context of the Black community.
Yeah.
I also was so excited that she mentioned missing and murdered as a section, because I did work in true crime for a very long time, and it was an overwhelming number of cases to select to write from on white women gone missing. Because like, even like Mickey Kendall said, like, we have such a I need to stop saying the word like, or I'm gonna want to die when I'm listening back to this later. Even Mickey Kendall was mentioning that there is such an oversaturation of when a white woman goes missing. It, like, a white woman from a suburban area, the soccer mom kind of woman, right?
Mm-hmm.
There is such a tendency to overanalyze and put so much effort into looking for this woman just because she's white. Whereas in Black communities, in Indigenous communities specifically, women go missing every few minutes.
Yeah.
And there's more of a tendency for police and people and media to say, oh, she ran away.
Right.
Versus looking at it as the issue that it really is. So that's something I'm very passionate about. I was glad she mentioned it, because I was like, the feminist lens doesn't look at this, I feel, in a lot of spaces, especially online.
Do you remember? Oh, fuck. It was that Florida people and that young, they had, like, it was abusive relationship and, like, the boyfriend or the husband or fiance. I forget her name, but
Gabby.
She went,
Gabby.
Yeah. And I remember that conversation really coming up then in the aftermath where it was like, the entire country is involved with this now.
Yeah.
Why does this not happen with this, with other women, with other people, with people of color?
With the hundreds of thousands of Indigenous girls who go missing all the time.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Things like this. Like, it just is so heartbreaking and frustrating that I was like, yes, we need to start including things like these, like talking about that within the context of feminism, because it's a huge issue. Like, the idea, I'm going to need to stop saying like, oh my God. This idea that white feminism takes hold of all other feminisms is just inherently wrong. And we are on the path, I feel, to make changes in that. But again, changes take a long time. And this is one of those books, like, I know every once in a while we read a book and I'm like, everybody needs to read this book. But
everybody
needs to read this book.
Everybody,
because it makes even whatever you thought you knew about feminism, again, coming from non-Black women talking about feminism, everything I thought I knew about feminism, this changed or gave me something else to think about.
Right.
Which I think is so important, because there is a tendency, especially for, you know, the woke folks of the internet, to be like, everything I need to know about this topic. I know a bunch, I've reached that. So I don't think I need to look for more information on this topic. And, you know, that's limiting the education level and the knowledge that you're bringing in. And knowledge changes about these things all the time anyway. So this was one of those situations where I was like, yes, any person who especially labels themselves outwardly as a feminist needs to read this book.
Yeah. Oh, shit. What was I going to say?
You know.
Oh, I think one thing that I have a huge issue with, not issue, I like, it's an internalized issue where I'm like trying to get over it myself, is my like aversion towards guns.
Yeah, I knew you were gonna say that.
Military, yes, but I don't know if that's really gonna go away. But guns, and so like in very radical left spaces, it goes more towards, no, we need guns. We're preparing for the revolution. We need to be able to protect ourselves, blah, blah, blah. Whereas like you go a little more center left and it's like, no, get rid of all guns. Weapons are the issue. Like, we don't need more guns out, you know? Mm-hmm. And then reading about this, it was really, and like, there are a lot of like super far left feminists where it's like the most like feminist thing you can do is learn to shoot and carry a gun. Mm-hmm. And I have just always like, I hear that and a wall goes up and I'm just like, I don't like that. And that is something like I'm working on. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think it is natural to have an aversion towards the idea of having more guns mm-hmm. out there with like everything we have witnessed
right.
all these years. But from her perspective and stuff in different communities where there is more gun violence, mm-hmm. where she talked about getting a fucking haircut from a gun, like a bullet coming through and trimming her bangs.
Yeah.
She said something that I like wrote down because I was like, holy fucking shit. With bullets that didn't hit me still changed me.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I mean, I think to a certain extent that's especially like for the younger generations who've watched all of these school shootings happening and then had to pack up their backpacks and go to school. Mm-hmm. Those bullets like across the country, that still changes you. It still affects everything. And yeah, so like, I don't know. I think the chapter on guns and gun violence really made me think and ponder about like my own perspective on those things.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, just personally, I just think guns are scary. Like, that's not for me.
It's just fucking scary.
They're scary. I've shot guns before, different kinds, but they're scary. Like, while holding them, I was not in a situation where I really wanted to do that, by the way. But they are scary. Like, the people I were with thought I was going to enjoy it once I was doing it. And I was like, this just made me more scared of them.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there's – so for me personally, I just don't like them. But I do understand the context with which sometimes they are, I don't know. Maybe I don't. I don't know. I'm still learning. I feel like I'm still learning.
This is a hard one.
Perspectives of choosing to keep guns in the homes and things of the sort. But I had a point that I was leading into. What was the point? Don't know. But I do recall her talking about her experience with her first husband and how he was extremely abusive. Yes. And she said her first husband had – she'd experienced intimate partner violence, but at least he didn't have a gun mm-hmm. or else she might not even be here today. And that is one of those things where you're like, yeah, you can –
And it was because he didn't have one at the time. And by the time that she left, he had been, he had already been notified, or like the police had already been notified about domestic violence within the home. And so because like, if he had gone to try and get a gun, because they were in the state of Illinois, he wouldn't have been able to because of his history with domestic violence. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of emphasized too the need for like, if there is going to be gun, like acquisition type shit, to have those laws in place.
Right.
And to have those parameters for keeping people who are going to do very, very, very bad things with them from getting them.
Right.
Yeah. Another line, this was near the beginning too, but I wrote it down. It was just the idea of trickle down equality. Oh, mm-hmm. God. I can't believe I stumbled over that. Trickle down equality. White feminists are essentially the Reagan of mm-hmm. fucking equality movements.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. Which I think is an accurate.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Comparison.
Definitely.
I also found it, I liked that while this was a really educational read on the surface, it was also tying in parts of her life, like her unique.
Yes.
experience that also felt maybe perhaps not so unique. I think like the way that she transitioned into talking about hunger as well, and specifically talking about food deserts, I thought was really, really important, because I think that that's something that not a lot of white people think about, because they tend to move out of those areas or avoid those areas that are more densely populated with people of color. And so therefore they don't even really understand the concept of a food desert a lot of the times. So I think this was just really, that was really, really important to talk.
Discuss
about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You agree.
I think she said statistically at least half of, some 42 million Americans are struggling with hunger. Statistically, at least half of that number are women. But given gender bias and wages, the real percentage is something like 66% of American households struggling with hunger are headed by single mothers. This is a deeper issue than even, you know, than even just the food deserts. Like it runs deeper. It runs into women. Mm-hmm. Black women.
That's another thing. That's the thing, is like all of these things that I hadn't considered kind of putting under the umbrella of feminism is just,
And then the claim, like, soda is so bad for children, play out with images of kids going to soda machine and receiving diabetes instead of a ginger ale. If sugar was a toxic chemical guaranteed to bring about illness in all who consumed it, then these images might make sense. But the hyperbolic assertions that obesity can be cured by taxing soda ignore studies published by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention that prove that numbers on a scale have very little to do with health outcomes, et cetera, et cetera. Like talking about obesity and the such.
Like
and
how attitudes we can, towards...
How a lot of... specifically white women, I would say, look towards how women of color raise their kids and kind of go, well, that's so unhealthy and things of this sort. But again, it's like, well, when you live in a food desert where the nearest grocery store is too far away for you to get to or too expensive to shop at, then, these alternatives are cheaper. Or how she discussed, like, she would eat I don't remember what specifically she said she would eat, but, like, some kind of, like, cheaper snack food or whatever in place so that her kid could eat food.
Right. Yeah.
It's like, this is the kind of thing that a lot of white women don't even ever have to consider in their lives.
No.
And obviously this is not discounting the fact that, there are white women living below the poverty line, but it is more to a point that Black women experience this, Latina women experience this, many women of color experience this, like, for the most part of their lives, if not their entire lives. So, yeah.
Do you want to hit me with some of the, like, ouch lines?
Yeah, let's see. They might be actually ouch. I just want to put that out there. Okay. Let's see. Oh, actually, the first one I just flipped to was the bullets that didn't hit me still changed me.
Oh, yep.
So, ouch.
Ouch.
Let's see. Yeah. Okay. So, when she was talking about being poor and it not being easy for her, she said, "What I remember is hunger and crying when I couldn't afford a Christmas tree. I remember being afraid that I couldn't make it, that I would lose my child because I couldn't provide. It's hard to take a rich woman's children. It is remarkably easy to take a poor woman's, though. As a society, we tend to treat hunger as a moral failing, as a sign that someone is lacking in a fundamental way. Remember to combat hunger around the holidays, but we judge the mothers who have to rely on food banks, free or reduced lunches at school, or food stamps for not being able to stand against a problem that baffles governments around the world." And then she goes on to say, "Indeed, we treat poverty like a crime."
Yeah.
Which, yeah, we do.
Yeah.
Let's see. I also have... I believe this is when you're in the section of pretty for a... "Meanwhile, I was supposed to have been flattered by the attentions of men in whom I had no interest, because why else did I wear dresses that fit? And why wasn't I flattered when they told me they weren't usually interested in black women, but I was the exception? Being harassed made me feel dirty and scared, but the narrative assigned to me from the outside was that I was supposed to not only feel flattered, but also have no expectation of respect or safety at work or anywhere else. It's amazing what those quote compliments will teach you once you're past the point of finding validation in them. Turns out backhanded compliments are offensive and ugly. Who knew?
Damn.
Ouch. Mm-hmm. Are you getting the ouch vibes?
Yep.
Ouch marks. Yeah. Let's see, what's this one? Because there is no consistent process or training for becoming a school police officer, and officers are not always trained on interacting with children and young adults, they may interpret perfectly normal age-appropriate behavior as over-the-top or even criminal behavior. Mm. Which is true, and we see that all the time, and that's why cops on campuses is not the solution.
Nope.
This is in reproductive justice. This is an issue that spans communities with Black, Latina, and Indigenous women facing similar complications as a result of bigotry. Alongside Mississippi appendectomies, which was another name for unnecessary hysterectomies performed at teaching hospitals in the South on Black women, there was a forced sterilization of Indigenous Americans, which persisted into the 1970s and 80s, with young women receiving tubal ligations when they were ostensibly getting appendectomies. Ultimately, an estimated 25 to 50% of Indigenous women were sterilized between 1970 and 1976.
Oh my God.
Forced sterilization programs are also part of history in Puerto Rico, where sterilization rates are said to be amongst the highest in the world. Most recently, California prisons were alleged to have authorized coerced sterilization of nearly 150 inmates between 2006 and 2010. Holy shit. That's fucking crazy. I knew about that happening within the context of Black communities, but the rest of the statistics really were like, whoa.
Ooh, yeah. Ooh.
Those are all my ouch ones, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are some good ouch ones. Yeah.
Pretty ouch, if I do say so.
Yeah.
I'm sure there were others before I decided to pick an ouch
color.
But then I was like, oh, I'm going ouch. I guess I need to pick something. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you have any other lines or anything?
Big lines? No, I think I mentioned the big ones that hit me.
I overall felt like this was a really accessible form of learning.
Yes.
Like I feel like this was not hard to digest. I feel like the facts that were presented to you and statistics were not overwhelming in a way that makes you go, okay, I'm just reading stats and statistics, right?
And my brain is not retaining anything. Yeah.
Yeah. It was more of, they were placed in the perfect spot to make that point stand out if it was necessary, which I think, a lot of, essays and things of the sort these days are not doing. They're kind of just throwing statistics in, which just oversaturates the statistics and makes you stop paying attention.
Yep.
So I think that this was such a book that you could very easily consume. And it wasn't, obviously the topics discussed were hard to read, and that's why I think trigger warnings are important. But I think that this is something that quite literally anybody who calls themselves a feminist should read.
Yes.
I would. It makes you think of all the the white social justice warriors from college, you know, makes you think of that. So I think that I also think this should be incorporated into reading for school. I think perhaps it's, it would probably never happen in high school, public high schools, to say the least. But I do think at the college level, this would be something that
intro to feminism or something.
Also just think I was thinking about classes that I've taken while reading different parts of this book, and I think it would have fit in in there nicely. Like I've taken classes on homelessness and those kinds of issues, and I think that would have fit in. There were sections of this book that would have fit in nicely there. And I think that this could definitely be taken to that level. I think you could teach a course on called this. Hood Feminism. Yeah.
Yes.
If Mickey Kendall ever wanted to do that, I definitely think she could.
Yeah. I agree. I think definitely.
That being said, this was an easy 5 for me. I was very much enjoying
What?
Sorry, I just got a text. My brain is just not working today. I was very much enjoying gaining knowledge that I feel like is useful knowledge to be used elsewhere. To like she said, like to not just take, but to give back. So I thought it was very, very, very important to read, and I'm so glad that we did.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Was this your rec?
I think it was. To read this. Yeah.
Yes. So I'm glad we did because feel good about it.
Me too.
We love learning.
We love it.
Especially, okay. I think, because we both came from such a community of like this white kind of stuff would never be talked about.
Oh, yeah. No.
Definitely.
Absolutely not.
And if you tried, you were weird, probably, yeah, for discussing. Even to call yourself a feminist in our community that we came from was like people looked at you judgy.
Yeah. Yeah. And then even the women. About I know. And then I started learning about feminism, and then I was like, oh, this has racist beginnings. Okay, maybe I shouldn't. So it was like I had to like overtly be like, I am a feminist against all the people who like fucking just hated women.
Yeah.
And then you start learning about it and you're like, oh, maybe I should learn more about feminism before I very strongly claim that I am one. And then right, you're like, okay, there's like a way to be a feminist that includes, yeah, other people. Yeah.
That's why I really like that Mickey Kendall was like, I'm the occasional feminist.
Right.
Exactly. I really liked that because at first it makes you go, what? When you come
what
from
are you talking about?
a very distinct, like the sugar-coated version of feminism, you're kind of like, what do you mean occasional?
Yeah.
You should be an all-time feminist. And it makes you think about it. So I really, really
definitely
enjoyed that. I feel like I'm not usually one to say I would reread this, but I definitely would reread this. And I think
I would definitely come back to essays from it. And
yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was I'm just so glad that we read it. Like, this was one of those things where I was like, yeah, this, I feel like this impacted me in a different way than mm-hmm. some of our other reads, nonfic yes. reads that we've read mm-hmm. recently. Yeah. Anything else?
Okay. I think that's all.
Cool. Okay. I think that's where we're going to leave it for this episode. Before we part, we'd just like to thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, I encourage you to leave a review on whichever platform you are listening on, if applicable. If you have any further questions regarding topics discussed throughout the episode, feel free to join our Hardcover Hose Discord server via the link in the show notes or send us an email at hardcoverhosepod@gmail.com. Feel free to recommend books to cover in future episodes as well. As always, I am Sam Cabrera-Dixon.
I'm Sammy Skorstad.
And this has been an episode of Hardcover Hose. If you enjoyed this listening experience and you'd like to follow along with us next time, the next books on our to-be-read list are We Hunt the Flame and We Free the Stars by Hafsa Faisal. Until we meet again, enjoy your reading.